Welcome to the Logic Consortium. Now that it looks like healthcare reform might be signed into law, we're going to be talking about one of the next potential ventures of this administration, immigration reform. Today we're going to be speaking with Dr. Raul Hinojosa Ojeda, who recently came out with a report for the Center for American Progress, talking about the potential economic benefits of immigration reform. In this article, he really debunks the myths that immigration would be a drain on our economy. Also, he talks about the huge waste of money that immigration enforcement has been over the last 15 to 20 years, the amount of money that we're spending with very little results. So please stick around. Thanks so much for listening. All right, I was hoping we'll go for about 25 minutes maximum.
Okay, perfect. No problem.
Okay, great. All right, I first want to kind of lay some groundwork and talk about the federal government's policy toward immigration enforcement in the last 15 or 20 years. As you point out in your article, the Border Patrol's annual budget has increased more than 700% since 1992. And along the southwest border, the number of Border Patrol agents has gone up from around 3,500 to more than 17,000. Can you talk about this massive increase and tell us what the effects of this increase have been?
Well, it's really unprecedented because it's not only the personnel, it's also tens of billions of dollars in walls and physical wall structures, which are basically the net result of which has been to not stop undocumented immigration, which has been absolutely determined by the economic demand in the United States. So in effect, what we're seeing is that we have gone from what used to cost about $300 per person in terms of apprehensions to now more than $3,500 per apprehension. So we're actually getting dramatically less efficient and more costly in terms of essentially doing the same type of enforcement in real effects in terms of people who are apprehended, even though we're spending a lot more money. And in the end of the day, what our research has been showing is that not only has enforcement become extremely expensive, the only real effect of it has been to push workers in the United States further underground, actually cheapening wages for the undocumented and ironically making them more attractive to employers. So the enforcement-only approach over the last 20 years, which has just gotten by leaps and bounds more and more money thrown in its direction, has not only resulted in much more expensive apparatus, which has not solved the problem, but on the contrary, has only succeeded in pushing the flows of workers further underground and actually probably deepening our dependence, many communities throughout the United States, on a workforce that can't defend itself. And so what we've been saying is that now is the time. We cannot continue going down the same path, because that's usually what Congress, whenever immigration issues are brought up, the only thing that they do is pour more money down the same rat hole that is actually not only becoming less efficient, but actually digging us deeper into the hole. We need a new direction. We need to go towards a path of legalization. We need to go towards a path of moving workers out of the shadows, making them be able to defend themselves on an even playing field with all workers. That helps all workers, and that's why we did this study to show all the overall dynamics of what would happen when we did legalization, and which was released by the Center for American Progress and UCLA about a month and a half ago.
You're listening to the Logic Consortium and our interview with Dr. Raul Hinojosa Ojeda, talking about a report that he helped to author that was released by the Center for American Progress in January of 2010. Talking about the need for comprehensive immigration reform. He was just talking about our recent enforcement-only approach, which has resulted in huge expenditures with little success and has pushed immigrants deeper underground, resulting in these immigrants being more attractive to employers. So these are the arguments that Dr. Hinojosa Ojeda just laid out, and we're going to go from here. Thanks so much for listening. And when talking about what's needed currently in immigration reform, you do some comparisons to the 1986 reforms and their successes and failures.
Exactly. What we did is that we started from asking, okay, what is the best policy approach given all the alternatives right now? So one thing we did, we went back to 1986 when bipartisan Congress and Ronald Reagan signed the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, which legalized most of the undocumented that were in the United States at that time. The results of that are quite interesting. The Department of Labor looked at the before and after impacts of that. And the most striking impact was that wages among the recently legalized went up. And actually, wages among native workers went up even more during this period of time. So we went and studied, well, what was causing this? Why did this happen? And what would be the impact of doing this again? And essentially what we found is that workers that had been here, these are all surveys done by the Department of Labor showed this, that had been here for over 10 years back then, which is the same as of now, they were seeing their real wages decline as they are now. And it, right after legalization, in the first 3 years, their wages went up by 15 to 20%, even more so for women. And because they were able to walk off the jobs of the worst-paying sweatshop employers, for example, or say that we demand better wages because now they can report them to the OSHA, and essentially dry up the demand for this very exploitative situation. The other thing that we saw is that the workers themselves, once they got legalized, have a completely different ability to also commit to their future in the United States, to have their own expenditure in health, in their own health care, and in their own, very interestingly, of education. They started spending a lot of money on English language, on GED, on worker training, which made them more productive. So the economy was able to not only have a big increase of wages at the bottom of the pyramid, if you will, but also much more productive ability to contribute to the overall economy of the United States. And what we did is ask the question, well, what would happen if we did this now? What would be the impact given the presence of undocumented workers where we know they are in the labor market, where they are in the United States, if we were to do the same type of legalization, at least in terms of bringing people out of the shadows? But unlike IRCA, which didn't have a future flow of legalization going forward, we also are now saying, like the Gutierrez bill out of Chicago, well, what happens if we not only legalize immigrants who are here, but also create a legal path so that if the economy needs immigrants, which we know the economy will need immigrants, that we would all be better off that they come here legally? And that's what we look at over 10 years. What we saw is that the economic benefit to the U.S. economy of legalizing the people who are here now and making sure that all future immigrants come in legally would raise economic activity in the United States by over $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. That's a big number, $1.5 trillion. And that's what people really don't understand about this, that immigration definitely helps the U.S. economy, and it helps everybody in the U.S. economy. It helps because we all depend one way or the other on goods and services of immigrants, and the future structure of the U.S. economy is going to depend on them even more. It's much better that we bring them in legally rather than sticking them in the shadows, low-wage situation where we don't let them contribute fully as they can into the U.S. economy.
You just touched on it, but one of the failures you mentioned of the 1986 reforms was that they failed to set flexible legal limits for the number of workers that were allowed in and out. Can you talk about how we need flexible legal limits that are capable of responding to the ups and downs in the economy, and why this is so important, and in 1986, failure to do it.
Right. Exactly. 1986 basically was a political compromise which punted the issue that everybody knows is really critical. And now, 20 years later, even more critical, is that the economy needs immigrants. And in fact, that's what is a huge strength of the U.S. economy, that we still attract the best and the brightest, very productive immigrants into the economy. But we do that in a way that we basically forced them to come here, a vast majority of them, to come here as undocumented. And that what we're showing is that that's a vicious cycle. And what is being proposed now in Congress, in the Gutierrez bill, is that there would be a mechanism for identifying what we all know is there, the level of the demand for immigrants, and making sure that we create the legal paths to make sure that the workers that are needed are brought here legally. Now, there's a very interesting dynamic that happens after legalization, which we saw in 1986, and we've seen in many parts around the world, and we expect to happen here. Ironically, when you legalize the undocumented, when you do away with this path of bringing in people here illegally, the actual needs, the demand for the undocumented in the U.S. economy by employers actually goes down. Why? Because their wages go up. We have now really made it the law of the land that immigrants come here and they have the rights as any other worker, so then they can't be exploited, super exploited, and therefore have employers start demanding a lot of the undocumented versus someone who's legally here, right? That's what we saw happen after 1986. For the first 5 years after IRCA, Immigration Reform and Control Act, actually undocumented immigration crossings along the U.S.-Mexican border, apprehensions along the U.S.-Mexican border, they all plummeted, all right? The immigration went down because essentially it was not that easy for employers to hire easily exploitable workers anymore. And that's what we're fully expecting to happen here again. You know, they have to understand immigration is, again, driven by the demand in the United States. If we change the legal conditions under which the wage relationship between immigrants and employers is done, if we make sure that they come here with legal rights and be able to demand higher wages, basically what happens is that employers will demand less of these easily exploitable class which we've created right now. And we are all better off for that, because we have people that not only have higher wages, higher consumption for the economy, and higher productivity, ways in which you force the employers to make sure that if they're going to pay a worker a higher wage, that worker has to be more productive, and that benefits us all. That this is where we have to move towards a 21st century future of how we bring workers into the country.
You're listening to the Logic Consortium and our interview with Raul Hinojosa Ojeda. We're talking about an article that he recently authored for the Center for American Progress about comprehensive immigration reform. In the last question, we were talking about the value of flexible limits to the number of immigrant workers who are allowed to come to the United States. And now he's going to speak about the potential economic benefits of immigration reform, which is really one of the centerpieces of his article. So thanks so much for listening. Please stick around. And then, as you kind of touched on already, the main point in your article is that comprehensive immigration reform could bring an increase in consumption and investment that could lay the groundwork for robust, just, and widespread economic growth. Can you talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, no, this is a very, very important point, you know, because, you know, I grew up in Chicago. I got my education there and did union organizing in Chicago. And same thing here now in California, in L.A., where I live now. We've been studying the impact of giving rights to the undocumented, and how does that help the economy. It actually ends up helping all types of people in the economy. It helps particularly low-wage workers in the economy, because essentially we change the dynamic, which is right now a dynamic where it really we've given the strength over to the employer that says, well, you know, I'd rather hire undocumented because I can exploit them easier. And then so then that actually lowers or creates a preference for hiring certain types of workers rather than Latinos and African Americans that are legal. We want to do away with that. We want to do away with that that actual subsidy that we give to employers to easily exploit a certain class of workers. The other thing that happens is that what we know, and now 20 years later, we've actually done here at UCLA a project called the IRCA Stories. What happens 20 years later once people get legalized? And it's absolutely fascinating. You see people working in a cash economy, rental, scared to death, not having wage increases. Legalization not only immediately increases their wages and their productivity, but over time, over the next 10, 20, 15 years, 20 years, we see this incredible ability for them to become homeowners, to be able to maintain bank accounts, to send their kids to college, all of these things in terms of joining and creating economic mainstreams that revitalize communities all over that at one point were really poor when immigrants were brought in and easily exploitable. And once those immigrants are let out, really creates a grassroots up economic development boom. And we fully expect this to happen again here. And the thing is that now it helps particularly the big cities, okay, which is where a lot of the undocumented are concentrated. That's where we see the biggest economic impacts occurring. But we're beginning to see it all over the place. There are communities throughout the United States, even rural communities, that would not survive were it not for immigration. And again, we'd be better off if those workers are also coming in fully legal and ready to integrate themselves completely and contribute as much as they could to the overall economy.
So you're arguing that there is a desperate need for comprehensive immigration reform.
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking now, we have, you know, more than 10 million undocumented. No other industrialized society in the world, you know, has this type of indentured servitude inside their borders. I at UCLA, we now have kids who have basically grown up here as little toddlers who are still undocumented, and they struggle to get into the universities, and they want to contribute. They want to be able to really be a part of the economic mainstream. It'd be, and all of our benefits, not only to economically to do this, but, you know, we have to get back to the rule of law and a moral basis of how the our labor markets work. Because right now we have a essentially a winking and a nodding, pretending that we don't have a problem, but we have a major problem creating a great deal of suffering. And what this study shows is that it makes absolutely no sense from an economic point of view to do that. The benefits are there. And our enforcement-only strategy is actually spending billions and billions of dollars to only make things worse, to ironically lead us further down this vicious cycle where we force more and more employers to start turning to this type of undocumented shadow labor market. It's the other thing we show in the study is that some people will say, well, you know, the answer is simple. Let's just, you know, deport the undocumented, and that will be an economic benefit for the United States. What we show is that that's absolutely not the case, either historically or in any type of analysis that we've been doing in terms of how the local impact of raids are, is that it actually makes things even worse economically. If we were to deport the 10 million undocumented, first of all, it would cost hundreds of billions of dollars to even try to do that. But the economic negative impact on the U.S. economy, we estimate to be $2.6 trillion over the next 10 years. It literally makes the current crisis mild in comparison. We would plunge ourselves into a depression if we were to take this type of an attitude of going down even further this path of breaking apart communities and throwing out workers. By the way, this was tried during the Great Depression, 1929 to 1932. The United States deported over a million workers. That is during exactly the time where the U.S. was falling down a huge hole, and that actually raised unemployment, by close to 30%. And this actual deportations contributed to that economic decline. Interestingly enough, when Roosevelt came in, he stopped the deportations, and it coincided actually with the beginning of an economic recovery in the United States. We think that the same type of thing will happen now, and we can do immigration reform. This is the right time to do immigration reform. It immediately creates stimulus at the bottom of the pyramid, allows people to contribute more, spend more, generate economic growth, and creates the basis for a more not only efficient future economic recovery, but a more moral and a more just one as well.
You're listening to the Logic Consortium. This is one of your hosts, Briskovich, and we're talking with Raul Hinojosa Ojeda. We were just talking about the need he sees for comprehensive immigration reform. Now we're going to be talking about some connections he sees between trade agreements and immigration. Talking about the North American Free Trade Agreement specifically in comparison with other trade agreements. So please stick around. Thanks so much. I've heard you talk about before the connections between trade and immigration. And specifically, you mentioned the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, and how it was pretty limited in scope in what it covered compared to other regional integration pacts like in the European Union. Can you talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, no, and thank you very much for bringing this up for your listeners. We've been looking at the issue of immigration in the context of free trade as well. And basically, we there's all this emphasis on free trade, free trade, free trade, when in fact what we've seen is that the North American free trade approach is very limited, because exactly what it needs to do is much more like the Europeans did, because they integrated their economies, and they integrated very poor economies. Spain, Greece, and Portugal, when they joined the European Union initially, they were actually about as poor as Mexico compared to the United States, right? But unlike what we just did here, which is just lowering the tariffs, they created a mechanism for making sure that workers could come into Europe legally and send money back home through banking systems, which were able then to more efficiently be able to be invested in the home countries and really generate an economic boom in those countries. If you think about it, right now we've created this dependence on immigration from Mexico, and this is generating a large amount of money going back, but it all goes back in the form of cash remittances, which do not have a productive impact in Mexico in terms of not only creating jobs, which would reduce the supply of labor, but also, you got to understand, Mexico is our number one market in the world for our exports. The Mexicans consume more U.S. exports than anybody else. Anything that we do to help the Mexican economy grow faster increases exports and therefore jobs in the United States. That's what the Europeans figured out. They figured out that if we integrate the poorer countries, we let workers flow in. They also had something called the regional development funds, where they actually invested in making Spain and these countries grow faster. Why? Because that would help German exports and French exports, etc. And it was a much more intelligent, comprehensive way of partnering with our global partners than simply doing a free trade agreement, just essentially lowering tariffs and giving more power to corporations instead of having a more broad vision about how we do these trade agreements with a development focus. Now, this is obviously North America, it's not Europe. So what we actually do think, though, is what is possible in the North American context is to create a regional immigration agreement. Basically, the U.S. should just primarily act on its own, clear up this real problem we have of depending on workers to come here and bringing them in here without rights. We should do that for our own good. And but the good thing about it is that if we complement that with other strategies that could then let legal workers send their remittances back home through credit unions and microfinance institutions that create jobs in the villages where whether we like it or not, Chicago is already connected to all these villages in Michoacan and Zacatecas and Jalisco. All of these villages, you know, are connected to our economy. We'd be better off basically giving people rights on both sides of the border, raising economic benefit on both sides of the border. That would help us here at home, and it would create better exports for the United States to Mexico as well.
You're listening to Logic Consortium and our interview with Raul Hinojosa Ojeda, just taking kind of a regional perspective on comprehensive immigration reform. And now we're going to be ending with kind of a political ideology question about the third route or the third way that I've heard him mention before that he's written about. I've seen you mention before what you and some other people call the third route or the third way, really acknowledging the benefits of efficiency and integration while also emphasizing always the need for better opportunities for other people. Can you talk about this from an ideological standpoint?
Well, you know, in many ways, obviously, in the current environment of intense polarization, you know, we need this even more than ever. I think many of the problems that we're dealing with right now, particularly these protracted problems having to do with international, you know, trade and migration, as well as healthcare in the United States, you know, we need to be able to focus that we have big problems which require comprehensive solutions. And what we're trying to do, at least, is to say, and I think that we've had some success with this study so far, is to set the terms for the big questions. What are we really talking about here? In the end of the day, immigration is something that's going to happen, and if we do it right, it creates much, much greater economic benefits for all than if we look at it from a narrow sort of ideological a punching ball and make it fit into the current debate rather than breaking through into this bigger solutions that we need to focus on. You know, I actually think that right now what's going on in Congress on immigration, it's a complicated political environment, but I think that Republicans as well as Democrats are beginning to realize that that the demographics are there for us to have to rely more on immigrants into the future, and that the Republicans are very weary of being seen as the party that basically tried to block a group of people who is going to become a bigger and bigger part of the U.S. Population and going forward. So I'm hopeful that in a combination both of these types of studies coming out, giving arguments to people that are trying to argue for both efficiency and greater equity, are beginning to meet political realities as more and more people say and politicians say, we have these serious problems, we have to address them. Sticking our heads in the sand is now becoming counterproductive. A solution is going to have to happen. Let's get on it. Let's be a part of it, and or else we're going to be basically rolled over by historical events. And I think immigration reform is one of those types of issues, like civil rights, that absolutely is going to have to happen. We cannot maintain a house divided the way we have, with part of the workers with rights and part of the workers without them. I mean, it's the age-old discussion in the United States, going back to slavery, going back to civil rights. It's sooner or later, this country is going to have to deal with what is most both economically the best solution as well as morally. That, you know, usually, as Winston Churchill say, we usually get there, but after exhausting all the other possibilities, which are the worst options.
Professor Hinojosa, thanks so much for joining us. I really enjoyed the interview.
I did too. Great, and it's good to got to talk to all the people in Chicago again.
And that was our interview with Raul and Ojoso Ojeda, talking about the need for comprehensive immigration reform. Well, thanks so much for listening today. This is the Logic Consortium. You can tune in again in 2 weeks, and we're going to be talking about the recent Supreme Court decision, Citizens United versus the Federal Elections Commission, the one that had to do with free speech and corporations making advocacy ads. So please stick around and tune in.